Episode number 280, Kingdom Innovation for a Brave New World, with Doug Paul. Part 2. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Well, hey guys, this is Making Sunday Happen, the definitive podcast for those who plan, create, and execute worship experiences at churches all around the world. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. Glad to have you here. This is episode number 280. We've been at this 5 or 6 years now, weekly, so feel free to take a dive into the archives of our show at makingsundayhappen.com, makingsundayhappen.com. We've organized the library into categories of ministry like production, worship, communications, volunteer culture, and more, so you can easily find your way to an episode that interests you the most. You can subscribe to the show on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume your podcast. And we're glad to have you on the journey with us, figuring out how to share the gospel of Jesus Christ effectively through the churches that we serve. On this week's episode of the show, we continue my conversation with the author and innovator of the book, Kingdom Innovation for a Brave New World. His name is Doug Paul. If you missed part one of our series with Doug, feel free to jump back to last week's episode of the show to get caught up on the content that Doug and I are talking about. I'll talk with Doug about what the church looked like pre-COVID and what it will look like now, some innovation strategies as the church moves forward. We're going to be talking more today about where the church is headed and how we can innovate to reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Before we jump in with Doug, let's check the mailbag. Here we go. Our testimony this week comes from Jonathan Johnson from our Making Sunday Happen Facebook group. Jonathan said, "Even though the pandemic hit us hard, our church put plans in motion to keep moving forward. It was a blessing that we ventured into live streaming a year before COVID-19 hit. Because of this, we were able to remain open while following all the guidelines and stipulations that were put in place on gatherings. I was sent home at the time as well because of my diabetes, and a small production team was put in place to live stream just the speaker to keep producing our church services on Sunday morning and evening, Wednesday night, and Friday night. This was awesome because we were able to still spread the gospel of Jesus Christ and be safe and obey all the laws and regulations that were set here in Alabama. It was easy to keep rolling while a lot of surrounding churches didn't have a plan of action and just shut down. Lots of churches around here don't even know how to live stream or anything." Great word, Jonathan. I'm glad that you put that in place a year ago. Thank you so much for sharing that. Glad that your church is continuing to reach your community. All right, I would love to hear from you. You're welcome to email me directly, carl@1230.media, or you can find me on social media. I'd love to share what God is doing at your church and through your ministry. All right, part two of my conversation with Doug Paul is coming up right after this. Hey guys, I wanted to let you know real quick about an ebook that we've written called Creating a Dynamic Worship Service Flow, How to Plan Experiences That Inspire. In creating the flow of your worship service, you are creating the experience for the people that attend. In placing elements of your service in the order that you want, you determine the journey in which they go on. So, how can you make it more dynamic, exciting, cohesive, memorable? In this ebook, I share 7 quick tips for creating a dynamic worship service flow. Tips for how to plan ahead, how to take your audience on a journey, how to focus on the transitions in your service, and more. You can pick up the ebook today at 1230.media/books. It's only $5, 1230.media/books. So identification, ideation, experimentation. Number 4 is mobilization.
Yeah, once you have an experiment that works, you're asking a real simple question. Why did it work? Because you can't multiply something if you're essentially a blind squirrel has found a nut. And so you want to be like, well, if we did that once, how could we do it 1,000 times or 1,000,000 times? How could it happen over and over again? So you've got to walk through a process called codifying something, where you're getting it down to its simplest, most reproducible form. And then you are training other people in that innovation so they can do it. So if you think about when Bill Wilson with Alcoholics Anonymous, when he was able to stay sober, he was asking the question, why is this working? And so when we think about things like sponsors or 12 steps or having little sticky pieces of language in Alcoholics Anonymous, well, that's codification. He was saying like, okay, this is working in my life. Why is it working? And then he started to teach other people how to do it.
All right, let's move to multiplication.
Well, it is what it says it is, man. You're at this point, you're like, all right, what are the reasons this thing won't spread? Why won't this go viral? What are the barriers to this thing going? And so we're actually able to deal with some of the very specific things that would keep that innovation from spreading. Because ultimately, we want something to scale. And when we mean scale, all we mean is reach its fullest potential. So if it's supposed to reach 10 people, great, let's have it reach 10 people. If it's supposed to reach 1,000,000 people, then let's have it reach 1,000,000. And so multiplication is about dealing with the barriers that will keep it from spreading.
You talked about the one church that you work with that just launched their thing 5 or 6 weeks ago. Do you have another example of a church that's gone through this whole process and then the results that they've seen from it?
Yeah, so there's another church that we've worked with, again, just using the disciple-making one as an example, where they are, they're now into what we would say is fourth generation discipleship. So it's like, you're making a disciple, who's making a disciple, who's making a disciple, who's making a disciple. That's fourth, fourth generation. Because of that, they have more than 150% of people who are in house churches, which is like their form of small group or missional community, over against who come to their worship service. So they are 1.5 times the size in a more organic expression of the church than they are in the more formal expression of the church on a Sunday morning, because of that multiplicative factor.
Gotcha. All right, let's talk about some Barna research for a second. So Barna shows that 1 in 3 people who were attending church pre-COVID are no longer attending church in any form. So what do you think the church needs to do to reach people now?
It's a great question. I'll give two answers. One is, I just don't know that we're going to fully know how all this shakes out for another 3 years. I think we don't know when COVID's going to end. I mean, we've got the city health director is at our church. And so we obviously spend a lot of time talking about this. He's one of the elders at our church. And I think we're increasingly thinking, at least in our city, March-ish is going to be a time where it can start feeling a little bit more, not back to normal, but more, we won't have as many restrictions on us.
Why are they looking at March? Because we said the same thing. You know, the goalpost keeps moving. Why are you thinking March?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't fully understand all of the reasons other than they know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I don't. Yeah. Because I know them really well, I'm willing to trust them. But yeah. I think it's the goalpost that you're saying, though, just as an aside, I think is really important. You can't move the goalpost, but so many times. And so what we've tried to do as a local church is to project out as far as we possibly can and create large chunks of time rather than micro chunks of time that could constantly be shifting. So if you think about Andy Stanley, where he was like, look, it's just better. It's just better to give, like, here's what it's going to be like for the rest of the year. And we don't like it. It's going to suck, but this is what we're doing. It's better to be definitive in our leadership than to be going back and forth. And we're kind of that leadership school as well. It's better to give clarity and direction than it is to like keep ping-ponging back and forth. The amount of mental and spiritual and emotional energy that just a normal person at church needs to go back and forth to keep up is really difficult.
Well, and I think we're seeing that in the research too.
I agree with you.
People are like, you know what? I'm out until you guys get your act together or, yeah. you know, make a decision or whatever. Okay. So what does the church post COVID look like? Let's say 3 years from now, obviously online is here to stay. That's not going anywhere. So churches that were not online, have to be online and stay online and do great physical and digital worship experiences. But push me into the future. What do you think the church looks like in a couple of years?
I think it's going to be a couple of things. It's going to be smaller, for one. But I think, and this is for leaders who have eyes to see it, what you are seeing right now, I think, this is all a giant theory of mine, is we are seeing increasingly who the spiritually mature people are in our churches. And I'm not going to use the word remnant, because it's not that they're a remnant, but like what we're seeing is like there are people who had the spiritual muscles to lean in because mm-hmm. they knew, even though like, I don't want to do online, or I don't want to go back and forth, or I don't want to do small group online, whatever it was. But they made the decision to lean in anyway because they knew it was good for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're going to see is the churches are going to be smaller, but you might have a larger base of people that you're going to be able to build the future with. And so I think the wise leaders are the ones who are able to identify who's leaning in and how do we build the future together. So I think that's a big piece of it. The second one, and I don't think this isn't new, but I think for a lot of churches, it's going to feel new, is if you kind of use the Andy Stanley talking about, I mean, this is old now, but he always talked about like, you know, you've got the front door, then you've got the living room and you've got the kitchen, and talk about like the different ways that people get involved in a church family. Online is really like, it's the front door of the church now. Like people are not checking your church out for the first time at a worship service in person. That's not what they're doing.
Right.
And so I think the smart ones who are doing that, number one, I really like a lot of the stuff that Jay Kranda talks about, mm-hmm. where it's like, look, we've got to figure out once they're engaging online, if we believe that a human life flourishing involves worshiping physically, what are the next steps we need to give them? What are the stepping stones to get them from the front door all the way into the house? I think that's a piece of the future, but I also think there's going to be, if we're just talking digital, there are a bunch of people who are really pioneering some really, I think, innovative missionary work right now, whether it's like they're planting churches on Twitch, right. or they're just doing all of these things that people who are like Gen Xers or boomers, they have no concept of what it is that's happening, but this is where people are gathering. And right. again, I don't think it's necessary that you have to say like, this is the last place, this is where church happens. It must be online and it always stays online, but that's the starting point.
You work with churches all around the world, not just in the United States. So tell me some of the things that you're seeing non-American churches do right now. Is it different than the US?
I think some of it depends on where in the world you're at. I think, you know, if you think about Europe, in Europe, it's far more costly to be a Christian in ways that I don't think Americans have a grid for yet.
Do you think that's coming?
I think more of it's coming. I think there is a floor to how far that's going to drop depending on where in the country you are. I mean, I think in places like Portland, places in the Northeast, some of the coastal cities, you're going to see places that are going to be more in the like Denmark, like maybe the 3-5% range. But I mean, when you start thinking about places like Texas or Missouri, like in the Midwest, I think it's difficult for me to see it ever dropping below 10 or 15%. Mm-hmm. Whereas like in the UK, I mean, sometimes you're talking around 1.5-2%. And it's not just that you've got people who aren't a part of a church, is that everyone else is openly hostile to it. I don't think you're going to you're always going to fringes of that here, but I don't think it's going to be that full hostility that you see in Europe.
Do you think that that's years away? Do you think that that's coming? You just, I guess what I'm getting at is there are a lot of folks that are concerned with the future of the church and what it looks like. But you're very encouraged by what the church looks like. So what do you perceive that God is doing? And what do you perceive that us as the church can do to lean into what God is doing through this season, crazy season that we're in?
Well, I mean, COVID's been an accelerator, right? So it's not that it introduced, and this is always what crisis does. It actually doesn't introduce new problems. It amplifies the ones that already exist, and it magnifies them. So COVID has simply put on steroids all the issues we were already having. And in some ways, that's been, it's not that COVID is a gift, and the hundreds of thousands of people in the United States who've lost their lives, that's not a gift. But the effects of COVID can be a gift to the church if we receive it.
Get practical for me. What are those things that have been accelerated in the church?
Well, I think you've already named one. I think you had a very squishy nominal middle where somewhere between 20 and 40% of churches are full of people who maybe they're Christians, maybe they're not Christians, they're culturally Christian, and they're doing the thing of church because that's what they're supposed to do. I think it's a good thing for them not to be part of the church. And I genuinely, like,
you're
saying that
COVID wiped out lukewarm
folks. Like, if God says, I want to spit you out of my mouth, and that's good enough for me. I mean, because if you think about what culture is whatever is normal for a group of people. And it's really hard to set a Christian culture when a huge chunk of that group of people aren't committed to it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is kind of a wheat and tares situation going on right now where, you know, if you're lukewarm, you're probably not leaning in like you were talking about. There's definitely, you know, remnant might not be the best word, but there's definitely something going on where we're seeing committed Christians that really believe this stuff.
So I think you've got, so that's one of them. I think others are, you're really going to see some significant foreclosures of buildings. That was already going to happen. It was bound to happen because there were five or six very important waves that were about to hit the church in the next 10 years. And COVID has just sped it up. And so you're talking about, like, you know, Religion News put out an article a couple of weeks ago that was 1 in 5 churches might have to shutter in the next 18 months because they can't afford to stay open. I mean, so that's accelerated something that was already going to happen. I think online was going to happen, but now hopefully we're being much more innovative around it. And more, what I'm most concerned about, man, is permission giving. Will leaders who don't even understand online, will they give permission to younger leaders to just go try stuff?
Yeah, I think that we're seeing that. I think that a lot of senior pastors are more trusting of their communications director, or like, I don't know, so go for it. We've got to move forward. I think you're seeing a lot of leaders that are, even if they don't understand it, they are leaning into it, pouring more money into it and budgeting it. And that's what I'm encouraging pastors to do too. And I'd love to get your take on this is with where we're going, if online is here to stay, the things that we can do to innovate, we need to budget in that direction too. So you might need to take a hard look at the budget and go, you know, is the Sunday school material necessary? Is the decorations for the building necessary? And what should I be spending my budget on? Thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like, this is one where when I've had a number of these kinds of conversations with pastors in the last 7 or 8 months. And these things can't happen overnight because budgeting season doesn't happen overnight. But it's like, look, a good business, and I'm not saying the church should be a business, but like, we can use some like financial principles to understand how we budget for things. A good business is going to spend 10% of their revenue on marketing. And I think the more we understand what's happening online, what happens with social, whether it's paid social, organic social, whether it's being in places like Twitch, TikTok, whatever it is, taking 10% and putting it towards things where we're just experimenting, like it's going to take time to figure stuff out. Don't expect a return for the first 2 or 3 years, but have very strong KPIs, key performance indicators of what it is that you're wanting to see that you can measure and you can track. And I think that 10% is a good number. Maybe the pastors aren't starting with, or churches aren't starting with, but start at 5%, increase it by 1% every year if you need to get to that 10%.
Yeah. All right. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. Any parting words here, and maybe give us, you know, a quick place that we can find the book and get more of what you're offering.
You know, you can find the book Ready or Not by Doug Paul. That's me on Amazon, because they have a monopoly, and that's what it is that we get to do. And so we're selling everything there. We've got audiobook, ebook, hard copy. And then if you're interested in finding a little bit more about what it is that I do, you can go to dougpaul.org, not because I'm an organization, but because .com wasn't available. So
nice. Well, thank you for forgiving my cold and for hanging out with me today. So really appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey guys, I want to let you know real quick about a brand new movie out now called My Brother's Keeper. The movie is about a soldier and families that wrestle with PTSD. It is a military movie with some faith elements to it. A great movie to suggest to your volunteer team or congregation to go see. The movie stars T.C. Stallings, Keisha Knight Pulliam, and Joey Lawrence. I had a chance to chat with Keisha Knight Pulliam, who you might remember as Rudy Huxtable way back in the day on The Cosby Show. I talked with Keisha about the film and her role in it. You can watch my full interview with Keisha in the show notes for this episode at makingsundayhappen.com/280. That's makingsundayhappen.com/280.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on the show this week. Next week, I'll welcome my buddy Chuck Scoggins to the podcast. Chuck is a communications guy that helps churches, ministries, and organizations with Facebook and Google ads, as well as their communications strategies. You're going to love hearing from Chuck next week. We'll have a great time. Thank you guys for hanging out this week. Really appreciate you joining us. We pray that this content is helpful to you as you make Sunday happen at your church. We'll go out there and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit makingsundayhappen.com.